This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Debbie Lauks from Newport Beach.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 10th, episode 1849, brought to you today by horselovers.com. Good morning, horse world.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Hey, good morning, everybody. That's right. You did not hear Glenn the Geek. You heard my friend Debbie Lauks come in because Jennifer, where the heck is Glenn? I don't even get it today.
Glenn is toughing it out in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, sitting on the balcony watching the harbor where Bill Gates' yacht is parked. He's toughing it out.
Not a boat. Yeah.
Is it like a convention or something?
They call it a huddle. What it is all the different travel organizations in the state of Florida all get together and have a big powwow with all the different press in the travel industry. So that's what he's doing.
Oh, so he's now media because of Finding Florida. He's in the travel industry.
Yes.
Cool.
Oh my gosh. I hope they paid for his trip then. I guess with that laugh, maybe not.
Yeah, horse industry doesn't have the bucks, huh? Yeah, well, that's cool though.
Yeah, well, Debbie, we're happy you're here. You get to be on a show that's cut short too, because I think Jennifer, aren't you fox hunting after the show?
Well,
you have to leave early.
God willing, and the creek don't rise. The moment the show closes, I race out the door and apply Nigel's shipping boots, and off to hunting we will go.
How fun. Debbie, do they fox? I mean, is there fox hunting in Solvang? I mean, does anybody do that
out
there?
There is. I didn't know it until, about, I don't know, 5 years ago or so. A girlfriend of mine who I met years and years and years ago when I lived up in Washington State is the, I'm going to forget all the correct names. Jen, you have to help me with all the names, but who is the one that gets to wear the fancy boots
is the master of foxhounds. That's the big
the show. Master of the hounds. Okay, she is that up at Wood Hunt in it's one of the oldest fox hunting clubs on the West Coast up in Washington State, and it's beautiful. It's like one of those peninsulas where there's nothing but trees and forests. So you'd imagine it like real fox hunting. It kind of looks like England up there, you know. So yeah, we know a little bit about it. And then when she came down, she bought one of our willing partners' horses to have as an extra horse. And she told me all about it. Then she fessed up all the things she'd been doing in the forest all those years.
Okay,
that's cool.
I'm going to go up and I'm going to fox hunt with them, and I want to use their guest horse.
You should.
Bucket list.
You should. Definitely a cool idea, Jen. But I'm sure you'll have fun today on those flats in Florida.
Yeah, not many hills to gallop around in Florida, I'm sure, but how fun. Fox hunting is the coolest. I mean, I'm really, you know, experienced because I fox hunted in Ireland.
Ireland. You are more experienced than all of us now.
Oh my God, I just held on.
Yeah, on the road.
In the fox hunting world, one hunt in Ireland will get you more cred than seasons in the United States.
Oh, cool. So I was kind of joking. So really, I'm pretty legit. Cooper's Hill Equine, you guys, you can fox hunt too. Doesn't take much. So Jennifer, since Glenn's not here, the show has been shortened because you're bailing out. Tell us what's on today's show and then we'll leave you alone.
Coming up on today's fast-paced, short but fun show, Kelsey Temin is going to stop by. She is the owner of Trixie Chicks Trick Riders. She is part adrenaline junkie and part a collector of doctorate degrees from the sound of things. So we're going to hear from her. And then Sally Spickard is going to stop by, and she's got the latest on all the headlines over at Heels Down Magazine. And then to play the show out, of course, it's The Opium Equation by Lisa Wysocki and published by Cool Titles. I believe we're on chapter 17.
I don't know. I better look at that.
You better look at that.
So that's what there was some about. Drama happening. Like the police came and they found some stuff in Kat's house and they like took it out and she had to wait outside. So we'll see what's happening. What's going on? Is she being framed? I don't know. Who is it going to be? Do you think it's going to be the guy? I don't know. I don't know. I can't read ahead.
My hands are sweating.
I know. Mine too. All right. Daily Winnie time. Yeah.
Daily Winnie time. Ah, oh, that was a big boy Winnie. So I'll start off with, I want to give out my daily Winnie to a couple of guys that were awesome over the weekend. Boyd Martin, three-day eventer, Olympian, and Monty Roberts. Yes, that's Dad. They got together and they did in front of a live audience and live streaming that reached out to, I heard, hundreds of thousands, did a join up in front of a bunch of dressage people, which caused quite a sensation. So I'm really proud of them that Boyd would go in there cold, never having done a join up. Dad, you know, a little pressure to get an Olympian to look good, having never done a join up. Yeah. And it was beautifully done. And with one of Mom's homebred, Blackie. Black Design, who just looked gorgeous out there. And it was just really fun. I was just sitting outside the round pen there with my jaw slack. It was really cool.
It was really awesome. I was amazed at how Boyd clearly has never worked a horse in a round pen before, and he handled it great. He did great. I mean, you've got, you know, your dad sitting out there telling him what to do, so the master of it all. But I'll tell you what, I watched the whole masterclass. I was fascinated. Yeah. I watched dressage during the day. Hello, it was musical freestyles. It was awesome. And then I watched, you know, came back when your dad was working, and then I watched Boyd's. It ended a few minutes early, but I went back and watched the end. It was so fun. I wish they had that every Saturday night. I'd be like,
wouldn't it be fun?
I'd popcorn. I was like,
people were doing that. People were saying that. It was so fun to just sit there, you know, because it's so cold across the nation too. Everybody was kind of huddled in, but it was fun to watch. I mean, those lights and everything was not the easiest to do, to sit through that whole thing. But, you know, they're going to do it again in April, and not with Boyd. This time it'll be a couple of Dutch riders in Thousand Oaks, but they tell me they're going to do the live streaming again, that it was so popular. So I hope people can go in there and look at the link. It was really Legolos was there, which is just, they're going to be retiring. Stefan Peters is just walking around and, you know, having a good time. And there was just legends there. It was really, really a good time. So my daily winning goes to the brave Boyd and the Master Monty.
Yes, it was so cool. It was so fun. It was, and I'm telling you, people have gone crazy. Like, this is a big media thing. All people need is like a little bit of Monty in the U.S. and they go crazy. So
to get it. I think, yeah, seeing it live, I think knowing that, you know, there's something that you divide by two when you watch on video, thinking, oh, maybe they edited it well. I don't know how the subconscious brain works on that. But when you see it live and you see that horse, that big warm blood that was just shaking to walk over the plastic tarp, and he 17 hands, man. He was like a fire breathing.
Oh my God. Accident. I was worried for your dad. He was so scary. He was so big. Okay. Anyway, you guys can still go on and watch this. It is on Adequan. What's the Facebook page?
Yeah. Let's see.
Adequan West Coast Dressage Festival.
That's it.
Yeah. Find that. It was really awesome. Okay. Next Daily Winnie, Jen. I have to give my Daily Winnie to Jennifer and all of the people that are listening that drive. All drivers deserve a Daily Winnie. And let me tell you why. Because that shiz is scary. Okay?
I can't disagree.
It is terrifying. Okay, so I had my second lesson with, well, I guess her third lesson, but her second time being hooked up. The first time hooked up, just walked around a little bit. Yesterday was walking, trotting, her first time trotting with the cart. I started going and Jesse had ridden her, by the way, she's a world champion show mini trainer person, and she's amazing. And so, you know, I'm like, Jesse, less of the performance, more of the like pulling firewood to the neighbor's house. Like, that's what I want her to do. She doesn't have to be fancy. And then I ask, should I be wearing my helmet? She's like, that's a CDI type thing. She goes, for you, for show people, we don't wear helmets when we drive because their hair is probably all done. Anyway, I did ask. So, I got in there and walking around, of course, it's like makes me giddy because as Debbie knows this horse when I started, and all you guys do too. Yeah. This was a describe Precious Magic Gallop Jennings when I found her or a wild saw
woman.
Her.
She was a wild woman. Could not be tamed. I couldn't believe you were driving her. Oh my gosh.
She was wild and wormy and gross.
Yeah,
and she came down to be trained at the advanced course. And so y'all reached out and grabbed her and a bunch of others for our class. And I ended up taking her home and she was just like, you know.
If anybody's ever seen on stage or the movie Taming of the Shrew, she was like Taming of the Shrew. The Shrew. You know, I mean, her hair and coat and everything. No,
her entire body was matted. Yeah. I mean, it was really, she was kind of gross. And so, bless her heart, she's now, you know, 10 months later pulling a cart. And I started trotting, Debbie. I started trotting around. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going too fast. Is this fast? She's like, no. No, you can hear her on the video go, no, that's actually like the slowest you can go.
Good.
She's really rude, that Jessie. She's that really rude instructor. And I can hear her laughing at me the whole time she's videoing me. But whatever. It's fine because I trotted her around and she pulled the cart. And she also taught me how to hook up the cart because that was my other problem is I didn't know how to hook it up. And so I videoed it so I could have it for my record. So let me consult my video. So it was really fun and I'm so pleased with how she's doing. And she actually looks a lot better in a cart, pulling a cart, Debbie, than she does under saddle.
Yeah.
Way better.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. You have done such an amazing job with her. I mean, it's transformation and it's in such a short time. It was last summer. I can't believe you. She looks really good.
Got her home in the end of April and she was only, you know, two and a half. I didn't do that much with her. And then, so it's been just a whirlwind, but she learned so quick. And that's what I love about Monty's methods is it's all just builds on each other incrementally, but like exponentially at the same time. So anyway, it's been
good job. Good job. That is a good daily winning for you too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was really fun and really scary. And all you drivers are crazy, especially you people that do CDEs. That's insane. I'm trotting and I was like, oh my God, I'm out of control. I'm like, where do I put my feet? Like all these little things. I'm like, how do I hold the reins? She's like, you've been around horses for like 30 years. I'm like, I've never done this in my entire life, ever done this. I don't know how to hook it up. I don't know how to do it. I know nothing. So it's really bizarre to find a avenue of the horse world that you literally have zero knowledge about, none, after having been around horses for so long. And I couldn't gauge how fast she was going. It seemed like we were flying. And in the video I watched it, I'm like, oh, it's like barely trotting.
That's a weird sensation. So it's something about the wheels, I guess, huh? It just feels like you're gliding.
Is when you're on rough ground versus a smooth macadam road. When you're on a smooth macadam road, it doesn't have that same effect. I think it has to do with the bumping that you do. I really do, because when we're out with Scooter, if we're zimming going around in the field or especially in the arena, it feels like you're going much faster than you are. But when we're on the road, you don't have that sensation. So I think it has a lot to do with the surface you're on.
I did say to her, and maybe you could tell me what you think. I said, Jesse, She drove her first. I'm like, I don't need to be the first one to do this. I don't even know what I'm doing. So she gets in and trots her first. And I said, Jesse, what do you do if emergency happens? What if there's an emergency? And an emergency. And then I was like, what would constitute an emergency?
Yeah.
And kicking, and they can get their leg hung over the yeah. rails, and then they can rear and they can flip, all these horrible things. I said, yeah. I'm like, let's just clear this out. What happens in case of emergency? What would you do, Jennifer?
Well, if I had a, you really got to send them forward, really, if they're bucking or rearing or something, because a horse that's running can't buck at the same time, and a horse that's running can't rear at the same time. So that's just the same as riding. So those two, I would say, are exactly the same. If the horse gets a leg over the shaft, you need to get out and fix things.
That's what she said. Yeah. She's like, in case of emergency, get out.
Bail.
And I said, well, do you just get out and just get out and be like, see you later? And she's like, no, don't do that. She goes, get out and go to their head. Yeah, I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. So didn't just like let them go.
Well, you could do that too, I guess.
That's
practicing
like
your drop roll here.
Do you remember that Saddlebred video that went around where that one person like got out of the cart because the horse went crazy, and then all the horses went crazy, and that it was a horse show thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I could imagine. I'm like, you just get out and like, just let things happen, or okay. No, get out and grab their head. Okay. Gotcha. Sounds good. So anyway, very, very interesting. Jennifer, why don't you call our first guest? And, now Debbie, have you ever driven? Because I know you guys have a horse that drives out there, but
yeah, but I've never trained to drive at all. I don't know anything about that world. I mean, when we were kids, we've always had, I think, somebody pulling something around there. We had little match set minis and, you know, all kinds of little cutie pies, but I didn't know anything about it. I got to ride along for the ride, but Dad has always believed that is the best way to really drill down on gentle. He thinks if a horse can drive, then, you know, you really have a trusting horse. So he has all his willing partners horses learn to drive, and they start off. Yeah. Yeah. They start off doing crazy stuff. Oh, we got
hello,
Kelsey on.
Hey, Kelsey, it's Jamie and Debbie and Jennifer from Horses in the Morning. We are calling you live on the air. So don't cuss.
Hey. Just kidding.
Yeah.
How are you guys this morning?
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. Why we are talking to you today is because you are in the Trixie Chicks Trick Riders. And
yes, ma'am.
I don't know about Debbie, but I consider myself a little bit of a trick riding expert because I watch Heartland.
Right.
So
okay,
there is that.
No, that's awesome. That's actually funny you say that. One of my really good friends is the stunt double for that movie. So it's pretty small world. Yeah. She is the one who stunt doubles for Georgie.
Oh, she's Georgie's stunt double, not Olivia's stunt double, because Olivia's stunt double has to be like super mean because she's like Olivia.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one of the, because they shoot all of that up in Canada. So I'm not sure who they have stunt double for her. But the girl who actually stunt doubles for Georgie, I flew up to Canada last 2000. Gosh, I can't even keep track of my years anymore. In 2016, I flew up there for the Canadian trick riding competition that they had and used her horse. So that was kind of cool because I hadn't watched Heartland at the time.
Okay. So so you have actually seen Heartland. Is it something that trick riders watch because it's like their sport?
I became addicted very quickly. I'm not allowed to watch Netflix. I kind of have a problem. But after I went up there and, you know, talked to the girls and met the people that were actually stunt doubles and had been a part of that show, I had heard it, but my husband is not a horse person. So getting to take over the TV long enough to watch that was not really an option. And then once I came addicted, I did not sleep for 2 weeks. So, but I'm caught up on all of the seasons and anxiously waiting for the next one to be available.
Yes, I definitely am right there with you. I just finished. And so talk to me about trick riding. Where did this crazy sport come from? Whose brain?
So, I don't know. We're not the smartest people in the world. We have a good time, but obviously we don't ride horses the way you're technically supposed to. So back in the 1940s was when trick riding competitions were super big. So it's kind of like a combination of coming from the cowboys and Indians, but also over in Russia and the Cossack style riders that, you know, they used to use trick riding in war to avoid gunshot. And so, you know, that was something that was kind of cool that it came, you know, some of these techniques came from that. And then in the 1940s was when it was really big in American competition in rodeo. It was actually an event. So you showed up to the rodeo to compete just like you would for bull riding or barrel racing. And it basically turned into who could do the dumbest things on the fastest horse and be the best at it. So monkey see, monkey do. If you couldn't do what the person in front of you did, you weren't going to win the contest. And so people started getting really hurt, and they decided to change it into an exhibition sport, which is what we do today. And we travel around the country basically performing as halftime and rodeos and horse events.
It was like the equestrian version of horse. You have to make the shot and then make a better one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, back in the day and at that time period, I mean, they were doing crazy things like crawl down the back of your horse, between the back legs, under the belly, up the front leg, like all kinds of things. They had a thing called a stick ride where you tie a stick in your horse's tail and sit on it like a swing. And how you didn't get kicked, I don't know. But it just, some of the things that they did were just wild.
Wow. I mean, what you guys do is wild. So I can't even imagine if you're saying it's wild. How many trick riding groups are there in the, because I looked at your website and you guys do so many shows. How many groups are there? Are you guys it?
No, there's not very many. So I'd say in the world, there's probably less than 50 actual professional trick riders that make a living doing this. And there's a lot of little groups here and there. The biggest thing that you run into is since there's not very many professionals, there's also not very many of them that want to teach. And so as far as, you know, sharing that with the next generation, the people that are wanting to come up and learn about the sport, there's not a whole lot of people who are willing to do that, whether they don't want to teach, they don't want the responsibility, or they don't want the competition. Like you just said, you know, it kind of seems like if we've got a bunch of events, how does everybody have enough events to make this happen? So that's one of the things that, you know, we're really big on is we love teaching and sharing that with the next generation. But we also like the fact that we understand that there's way more than enough rodeos and events to go around. Even in the PRCA, there's over 600 rodeos. So we're not worried about having competition. We're kind of firm believers in if you want to be good and you want to do what you want to do, you keep constantly working to make that better to get to the point that you want to be at. So we're not, you know, we don't feel threatened by our students. And especially now that the competitions are coming back from a safety perspective, everything is geared around safety. Now that those are coming back, we're actually training a lot of our students for those now. So that's really cool to see that transition starting to happen.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean it's coming back around?
So they had, you know, they haven't had competition since the 1940s. And then they decided to try a competition back in 2005, 2007. And the problem they ran into is it's not very centrally located, like not in the U.S. Canada's a little bit better. They're all kind of in a tight-knit 10-hour-ish community. Down here, we're all, you know, 14-plus hours from each other, and then we're just spread everywhere. And so, you know, trying to get everybody together that works for the rodeo schedule, it didn't really take off like they hoped. And then they decided in 2016 to start it back up. One of the guys that spearheads the whole thing, his name is Tad Griffith, and he is a third generation trick rider. His dad was a world champion. His mom was the best woman trick rider there's ever been. And so he has kind of come back and helped us create these competitions in a way that it's all geared around safety. So everything that we do, you still have to have the fastest horse and do dangerous tricks, but you have to have all of the foundation skills to make sure that you can stay safe, your horse can stay safe, and everybody else in that arena is safe. And so it kind of helps too, you know, even if you're not wanting to be super competitive, but you want to get together with all of these other trick riders and you want to be involved in these events, you can come. There's a non-competitive division. We've got everything from Pee-wee, which is our 9 and under, or 8 and under, and then we have youth 9 to 12, juniors 13 to 16, and open is 17 and up. So right now, looking at our finals that we'll have coming up later this year, The youngest rider I think we have right now that's competing is 6, and the oldest is in her 40s. So it's pretty cool to kind of see that wide range.
Oh my God. Is there anything cuter than a little 6-year-old trick rider? Okay. I have a son who's 4.5. Not. I know what he's signing up for.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. There is nothing cuter. And I'm trying to hold off on having kids for a couple more years so I can reach all of my goals. But when you see a little 5 or 6-year-old putting around on a pony and doing all kinds of crazy things and just smiling, it's bad. It's so cute.
You ovulate, don't you? Don't lie. It just just ovulate right then.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Yeah, it's pretty bad, especially the little girls that do it, you know, are such. They have so much life and they enjoy what they're doing. And you just see the smile on their faces when they nail something, or even when they don't, they totally rock it. And they've got curly hair. And one of the girls that is here local in Missouri that I work with, her mom was a trick rider, but she has these curls that stick 4 foot off of her head. And she wears this little cat helmet with ears. And it's not good. Not good for me. It's not helping my plans here.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, hey, so do you and do the girls and you teach them, do you teach everybody for like their signature move? Because back to Heartland, I do remember when Georgie was going to try out for the extreme team and then Olivia stole her signature move like in the tryout. Does that happen?
No, not really. it's funny because that's part of the reason, like watching Heartland as a trick rider. The stunt doubles and stuff that they have are awesome. They're very lucky that they have good trick riders representing the sport. But in trick riding, there's different levels of difficulty in the tricks that you do. So, you know, right now there's probably 5 to 10 basic tricks that get performed a lot. They're kind of the first things that you learn. And after that, it kind of depends on how motivated you want to be. So Shelby and I, my teammate, we always try to strive for bigger and better. So if I nail something, I'm already thinking about what's my list, what do I want to do next, what is it going to take to get to that point. And sometimes people are completely fine doing the same 5 tricks through their entire life, and that's fine. That's more power to them. But I'm constantly trying to figure out, you know, there's tricks that haven't been done since the 1940s or haven't been done in 20, 30 years. And so I'm kind of trying to bring that back as much as I can. The hard part is you can't learn trick riding from a book. You can't learn trick riding from watching YouTube. You have to actually go and learn from the person to make sure that you're taking every precaution on a safety perspective. You know, what we do is already dangerous in the first place. And so you have to take every precaution that you can to make sure that you're not putting yourself or your horse in added danger. And so finding people who are still around that did these tricks that still can have enough memory recall to actually tell you what to do and what to fix. Because every horse, every saddle, and every person makes all the tricks completely different. And so that's kind of the neat thing about teaching is it's a mystery all the time. You constantly have to figure out, you know, you're learning something every time you teach somebody, whether the person is 5 years old, which is usually a lot different when it comes to teaching the younger group, just because there's certain tricks you don't want them to do because of the safety. There's also other things, you know, they don't think as fast as we do. They don't see danger. You know, a girl who is under 10 who's doing gymnastics, they're fearless. You know, they don't see danger, and that's why they're so good, and that's why gymnasts start so early. But and the same thing with trick riding, when you start teaching a 5-year-old versus when you're teaching a 12-year-old, that 12-year-old already knows what danger is. And so they're like, why would I do this? I could die. So you kind of have to fight that. Whenever you're working with these kids, same thing with adults. You know, we consciously think, why in the world would I want to do that? Because I know exactly what can happen if something goes wrong. So you have to pick tricks that are safe enough for these kids that if something does happen, they can have enough reaction time to save themselves and make sure they can keep themselves. I know I'm going to use that word 600 times in this radio interview, but we can't emphasize safety enough.
It's cool. Well, I would love to have you back to talk about different tricks and stuff. We've run out of time, but I mean, if I've learned anything from Heartland, it is make sure that you check your girth or your cinch before you go on, because somebody else could come over and loosen it. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not quite. We're really trying to, because the horse industry alone is already pretty cutthroat across all disciplines. You run into things like that. And so we've really tried to, you know, there might not be any hope for my generation as far as fixing things, just because people are set in their ways sometimes. but this next generation that we're bringing up, we're really teaching these girls to have a good time and love what they're doing and enjoy the other girls, you know, push each other and motivate each other. You can still be competitive, but not to that point. You know, we're getting ready to have a competition up in South Dakota at the end of the month, and I'm trying to plan a pool party for the girls and just have a good time, get to know each other and be happy for each other. So I know it sounds cliche, but that's what we're working on.
I know that's how you live your life like that. Kelsey, thank you so much. Kelsey Temin, and it's Trixie Chicks Trick Riders, and trxchx.com. Kelsey, thank you so much for coming on. I want to have you back
you
on again because this is awesome.
Absolutely. Anytime. Just let me know.
All right, cool. Thanks, girl.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye. Now, is it weird that after talking to her, I'm looking at these pictures on her website that my neck hurts? feeling really old right now.
They're amazing. There's a lady who lives locally in Solvang, California, called Audrey Griffin, and I was going to ask her. She's a Hall of Famer, and she's in the Cowgirl Hall of Fame. You know, won everything, and she came up through the 40s performing Roman writing with like Casey Tibbs, legends like that too. Those people are bonkers, but she's still writing. She does amazing stuff. She's tall, willowy, and you can just imagine her. I wonder if they still do Roman riding, you know, where they straddle like four horses and go over the jumps.
Well, I mean, Georgie did it on Heartland, so I guess it still goes on.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
Yeah, good interview. So I probably have a problem with that. I should really stop thinking those people are my friends. Oh, sad. Well, hey, we're going to do a commercial while Jennifer goes and gets Sally on from Heels Down. And I don't know if you probably don't, being that you don't own your own horse, but there is an addiction to horse lovers that's common on this show. And if you go to horselovers.com, it's horselovers.com, you can see all of the things that they have for sale. Over the weekend, Chad was out of town. I was really glad that my most recent horse lovers box came while he was out of town. I was like, yes, score. It's like getting a free package.
Got away
in trouble. Yeah. So you guys go check out. They've got the closeouts on Noble Outfitters right now, which are some of my favorite things, clothing to wear, especially here in the summer. And then if you like to dress your horse, they've got 50% off of blankets. They're Arctic sale that they have going on. Let's see, what's the deal of the day? Deal of it. Oh, that's the Arctic winter blanket clearance. There's a weather beato winter blanket clearance, a liquidation sale, buy one, get one free turnout sheets. What?
Hold on. Did you say buy one, get one free? Oh, my favorite kind of sale.
I know.
I know. If it says BOGO, Jen's in. Let's do it. And then they've got their flash sale today. And oh my gosh, so cute. Ashley Kids full seat breeches. I almost feel like kids don't deserve full seat breeches. Like they have to get old and fall off a bunch before they get to experience how awesome full seat breeches are. Is that just me? No. Okay. Well, go on. You can check it out. Horselovers.com. They also have some kids winter riding pants as well that are on sale. Deal of the day, flash sales, horselovers.com. It is an addiction. It's a problem, but it's totally worth it. Your horse needs it. Okay. If you don't love your horse, if you don't shop on horselovers.com, you don't love your horse. That's how about right. that?
Yeah. It's a good addiction. It's one of the good addictions. That's it. Exactly. I just got a jacket on there. Just a coat that's so nice. It's a Noble Outfitters too. They have great deals. They're just amazing.
Yes. Yes. They have all the training equipment, halters, lead ropes, horse boots, bell boots, polo wraps, anything you could possibly need. Horse Lovers, HorseLovers.com. And I think we've got our first guest on, Sally. Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good. It's raining in California, which I know is like the worst thing in the world. I know. It's so cold. I think it's like 67 degrees. So
where are you, Kelsey?
I'm in San Diego.
Sorry, Sally. Yeah, you're in San Diego. Please.
Yeah.
Don't talk to the rest of the United States.
I know. Yeah. I can't complain. Like, I feel like the last couple days on Facebook, everybody's complaining about everything being frozen. And I'm like, I mean, I'm cold too, but I guess I won't say anything.
Sally, listen, okay, I'm in Phoenix. I'm just east of both of you, and it is raining, and it is like freezing here. It's like 61, okay?
That's really cold for us.
It's crazy. Horses are blanketed in my house, okay?
I know. My dog has like a little Weatherbeater, like dog blanket. He's a Chihuahua, and like I have a blanket for him. And so he's like been going out in his like heavy coat every day because it's freezing.
Feel bad. And everybody listening has hung up on us now. But it is raining here. That's weird. And poor California has just had a heck of a year with the fires.
We have mudslides now. It's like now all of the land that burned is now susceptible to mudslides. So now this isn't down here. It's up by like a little north of LA, I think, is where like the big fire is. And now they are dealing with mudslides. I think like 13 people were killed yesterday in mudslides.
Yes.
Up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're talking to Debbie, who's her family farm is up in Solving.
Yeah, I can't even get up there right now because the 101 is closed. So that's why I'm down south right now. Yeah, I normally am up there every week, but this week we were down in Temecula, so I just stayed down here. But yeah, it's a little crazy making there, but we can't complain after all the hurricanes and everything. You know, we're just gritting teeth right now. But
like I told everybody at the beginning of the year, come to the middle.
Yeah,
come to the middle.
I'm from Kansas City, and everything is nice and landlocked there. You don't have, I mean, you got tornadoes, so I guess that's a thing. But other than that, it's pretty fine.
Now, Sally, how are things going over on Heels Down? Tell us what you guys talked about this month's show.
So, you know, I'm really excited about January. You know, everybody always comes out swinging the first of the year and everybody's got all these big goals. And we really wanted to try and put together, you know, we try and improve our issues every month. And so this month, I've been really excited reading it because Mark Todd's on the cover and I'm an eventer and Mark Todd is just, you know.
He's Sir Mark Todd to you, okay?
I know. It's just, I don't know if you guys saw that video of him riding that little tiny pony at a clinic. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, it was a kid.
Oh my God,
cutest thing in the world. He took this kid's little like 13 two-hand pony for a spin. And this kid jumps like 3 feet at least on this pony. And she's really good. And so he posted it on Facebook and said, as a caption, as a joke, like, I found my new next partner or something like that. And people took it seriously and were like, you really shouldn't ride a horse that small, Mr. Todd.
Oh, no.
He's like, okay, that's not what I meant. But
oh my God, he's 12 hands. He's 12 hands. Here he goes.
He's tiny. So you guys should watch it. It's amazing.
He's on the wrong diagonal. Oh my God.
The wrong diagonal.
I don't even know if he can feel anything.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. Oh, you got it.
Okay.
So,
my God, this is the coolest thing ever.
It is. And there's another video. If you dig a little, there's another video of the little girl riding the pony. And it is something to see. Like, she's going to be a really, really good rider when she's a little taller. So Mark Todd's our cover this month. And it talks all about how he did retire. And then he decided that he didn't want to be retired anymore. And now he's, you know, trying to get to WAG again. And it's pretty incredible that somebody, you know, it's very inspiring for people to read about people that, you know, have made these illustrious careers for themselves and still feel like there's more to do. Cause isn't that how we all feel? You know, it's just, there's always something else that can be done. And, you know, kind of segueing into another article that we did this month on the Event Writer Masters. I don't know if you guys follow that at all. It's a really interesting series, and Mark Todd is actually very involved with it because the whole point of the Event Writer Masters is to make the sport of eventing more broadcast friendly. And, you know, I'm sure it's something that you guys talk about all the time as far as, you know, how to make the equestrian sports more accessible to the general public. And this is something that, you know, Paul Tapner has really kind of headed up, and he actually retired from professional eventing in 2016 in order to focus on this specifically. So it's a pretty close to his heart passion project, and it's, you know, honestly gone really well. You know, the state, you know, it's obviously more of a European thing right now, but we've still got some Americans that have gone over and competed in some of the legs. And it's a really interesting breakdown and kind of a behind the scenes talk with Paul Tattner, and Mark Todd talks about it a little bit in the article on him as well. So it's a really good issue if you're an eventer, but if you're not an eventer, we always have, you know, articles on, you know, the upcoming requirements and that sort of thing, and judging criteria for the hunters, you know, how to do your equitation class, you know, and try and pin, which I was never very good at. So go back and read that. But, you know, it's always just something for everybody. And I'm super excited about it because I think we really put together a really good issue this month.
That's awesome. Okay. Yep. So you send these files to me thinking that I have a really awesome Apple computer, and I don't, so I can't open any of the files you sent me. So I'm just like, yeah. She's got them. Debbie's cool enough to have a Mac. So you guys discuss what's next.
It's a really good article, actually, Sally. I'm enjoying it because I don't know that much about eventing. So, I noticed one line in here, It's talking about that you're not actually trying to change why people want to get into the sport of eventing. You're just trying to make it more exciting at the elite level. And exactly. So that's just telegenic. Is that getting more money in the purses so that people become more like, oh my gosh, there's more on the line? Or is it just telling the story on TV or media better? What does that look like?
I think it's really just more getting the sport in front of as many people as possible. I
mean, education
you know, Paul Tattner is interviewed in this article, and he says something along the lines of, you know, our sport's never going to be as big as soccer is in Europe, right? I mean, soccer's huge, and, you know, you can't necessarily anticipate to be that big. However, there's so many opportunities that we have to bring the sport in front of people with excellent production of the videos. Paul, actually, I'm going to read this quote because it's really funny. He said, I got sick and tired of watching my sport on TV presented as a documentary about some posh idiots riding around on some posh country estate on horses.
That's true. But I don't think of eventing that way. Do people really think that it's that posh?
I mean, I don't,
which is cool.
It's pretty like seat of your pants, like throw on whatever tack you could get kind of thing. But I guess some people have that. You know, they see like the Longines and the Rolex and the Land Rover sponsoring everything. And obviously, we're very grateful for any sponsor support. But sometimes those brands are very luxury associated. So maybe
event where he lives, like on the grounds of Burley Castle.
The horse are literally stabled in a castle. Like, there's no way to avoid looking posh when you're literally riding in front of a castle. So
that's true. He's right.
I mean, you could send me over there and I could find some ways to kind of, you know, make it look a little more trashy, but I don't really think that's the point.
Over the weekend, we were at the Masters Series in Temecula, and that's for dressage, right? But one cool thing that they did is this cross promotion. They brought in Boyd Martin from Eventing, and they had him doing a jumping demonstration, a little lesson out there, giving tips and everything too. And he to me, obviously embodies eventing because he's just so comfortable up there. He's brave. He throws his, I think Jamie was watching a little bit of this too, but you can go back and watch that live stream, but he was sticking, gals, you know, in the middle of the jump just to make a skinny, you know, and make it more difficult for the horse. And the gal, I'm watching the gal, she's texting, literally standing
it was amazing.
As a ball. And there's no adrenaline in the body of an eventer, as far as I can tell. And what makes it exciting, I think, for these dressage people is it sort of shakes it up, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it shows that, dressage is a part of that eventing, but it's not it doesn't have to all be posh and pretty. It can be all about horses and exciting and extreme. So is that part of the plan, or was that a serendipity?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely part of the plan. And I think, like I said, you know, even little nuances is, you know, for example, the riders at the Event Rider Masters series get to choose their own music to ride their dressage to in the background. And like, just things like that to make, to bring it on a more relatable level. And like you said, Boyd Martin is basically the face of Aventine, if you want to put it that way. He's charming, you know, he's good looking. Yeah. You know, he's got the accent going, like he's really the
total. What did she say?
She's accent. Yeah, he, accent.
Oh, accent. I thought it was asset, which was close.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's really great what they're doing. You know, I think the more we can get any horse sport in front of as many people as possible, the better. And, you know, all us as media outlets, you guys, us, we do everything we can to try and make it relatable. And I think we're kind of on the right track. So I'm excited.
Good. Good. So you're an eventer, right? I mean, what level are you doing and what's your horse's name? Where do you event?
So I actually don't have a horse right now. My horse Rico, I sold over the summer to an excellent young rider, actually in Arizona. She's based, I don't actually know, somewhere in the Phoenix area. But I did bring him all the way up to training level. I did one training level and then decided that I needed to kind of focus on my career a little bit because horses are expensive. So kind of took a step back from that a little bit for the time being, but I was happy
to get
that one.
What's his show name? Who bought him? I would probably see him at a horse trial.
Yeah,
I'm going.
Totally will. So his show name is Mischief Managed because I'm a huge Harry Potter nerd. And all of my horses are Harry Potter names. Nice. So I don't believe she plans to change his name. He did actually colic really bad a few months ago. So he's still kind of on the road to recovery from that, but I'm guessing probably like summer, fall time she'll be back out going novice training with them. So I'm really excited to see because I think he could be a young rider horse for her for sure.
Cool. I'll see him out there. If he's in Phoenix, there's only like three eventers.
There's not many.
Eventing barns. Yeah. So we all know each other.
Yeah. It seems like a very small, close-knit community out there, yes. Which is good. So
yeah.
It's good. But yeah, you'll definitely have to keep an eye out for him. He's a good boy.
I will. That's cool. So, all right. So what article did you guys have your secret articles next? What's next?
The secret article out of the archive here. Another one of our writers did this article on a new show series in Wellington. And you guys, I'm sure, have at least been involved with the Wellington experience at some point. And we all know exactly how expensive it is. Like, it's just unfathomable how much money it costs to go and show at the Winter Equestrian Festival. And so Nona Garson actually came up with this idea with her business partner. I'm going to butcher his name, but it's George D'Ambrosio, I think. So they started this new show series that is called The Ridge in Wellington. And it's basically, it's rated shows and it's schooling shows, derbies, that sort of thing. And it's all on a much more affordable level so that people that have green horses or just, you know, a smaller budget can still go down and experience Wellington, you know, kind of for themselves and get the same feeling of doing a top level show. And I just think it's a great idea because, again, accessibility is the theme here. How do we make this sport accessible to more people? And this is for the hunter jumpers, obviously. And, you know, the money that goes into the showing these horses is just insane. And so, you know, this is definitely another option for anybody to really participate in. So I thought it was great to kind of shed some light because I'd never heard of it until I read the article about it. I just thought it was a really, really interesting idea. And, you know, they also have this thing called the Wellington Turf Tour, which is jumper shows, but they go all over, I guess, Wellington at a different location every week. And they actually have a shuttle that you can pay $75 and they'll bring your horse from your farm to the show. So again, you have a lot of ways to make it happen and make this show series something that you can do, which is awesome.
Well, fantastic. Well, we're running out of time, but as always, you can find Heels Down. Now follow them on Facebook too, because you can see a lot of the articles and the links to them. Heels Down Magazine on Facebook. You guys have your own show. I mean, my God, you're all over the place. So
we
Heels Down.
We are trying to be everywhere.
Well, you're doing a good job of it. What's the website?
HeelsDownMag.com is where you can find all of our web content, and then you can get a sneak peek at the magazine as well as do a subscription.
Cool. Check it out and check it out on Facebook, Heels Down Magazine.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Allie.
Have a good day.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Running around getting the book. Jennifer, we lied to people.
It's not chapter 17?
Not chapter 17.
What chapter is it?
We're at chapter 16.
We're chapter 16. There we go.
Very close. We're close. I'm like 17. I'm like, what's going on? I don't know anything. Oh, go back it up. All right, Debbie, this has been so fun having you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me. Yeah. You know, sitting in Glenn's seat, I feel quite honored. Thank you.
Well, I'm irritated with you because I want you to do really bad ads.
I want to do really bad ads. I will do that next time.
Okay. Next time you're in on a Friday, whether you like it or not, and or Monday, you can do First World Problems.
Oh, I love that one too. I was wondering you guys don't have to drink on either one of those, right? I always hear about all this drinking stuff. No,
that's heels down.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm up too early to even think about drinking.
Oh my gosh. That's what I was hoping you'd say. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm usually hungover still.
You're bad.
Well, I will see you, Debbie, in a couple weeks.
We will. Yeah, because you're coming out for Galway Downs in Temecula, and then you're heading to Solvang. By then, the roads will be clean and ready for you. And, you know, it only rains every 5 years, so we're done.
We're done, yeah. So, I'm heading out to Galway on February 1st and then competing the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And then from there, I have to figure out some way to drop Chad and Lucas off at the airport with the horse trailer. Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work yet. And then I'll be with you guys for 2 weeks. So
I'm so excited. Are you nervous? Don't be.
Totally nervous. Are you kidding me? No. I'm supposed to like gentle horses and your father's methods with him watching. Oh, no pressure. And no judging pressure. By the way. Yeah.
he will. He'll be so excited to have you there though. Just, you know, just take it all to heart, but he will help you. He will help you. I'm so excited to have you moving on too. I'm so glad you were able to do this in February.
Me too. I'm excited.
We'll do the show from there too, right?
Yes, we're going to do the show from Flag Is Up Farms for
your
a couple
technical
weeks.
Assistant. So. Technical assistant brings coffee. That's what
That's
I
right.
do.
Sounds good. Looking well, forward. Debbie, I don't know if you have listened to all the Opium Equation, but Jennifer, I think it's time to start Chapter 16.
The Opium Equation is the first of the Cat Enright mystery series written by Lisa Wysocki. It features Cat Enright, a Tennessee Appaloosa horse trainer, Darcy Whitcomb, teenager with a trust fund, Bubba Henley, a budding juvenile delinquent, and John Gardner, a mysterious barn manager. And of course, there's Sally Blue. Thank you to the publisher Cool Titles for allowing us to read this book. If you want to read ahead, all four books in the series are available in stores and online everywhere or at lisawysocki.com.
Chapter 16. In the quiet of my kitchen, I made a comforting concoction of hot chocolate using soy milk, dark chocolate, vanilla, whipped cream, and lots of chocolate sprinkles. I thought about adding some coffee-flavored brandy, but decided it was too early in the day. Besides, I had horses waiting. I poured the mixture into a double-sized mug, and Hank wagged his tail hopefully as I took a steaming cup into my living room. His wags lessened considerably, however, as I explained to him that chocolate is not good for dogs. Besides, I realized Hank was still not 100% back in my good graces. I don't care what they say, chewed sofa padding does not come out of Berber carpeting. Clearing the foam flex swivel rocker of yesterday's mail, I settled in to think. I began the day believing Carol was right that Bubba had seen or heard something that frightened him, and he was hiding. But now I felt differently. I was starting to believe that whoever killed Glenda had also done something with Bubba. Whether the killer had hurt Bubba or just taken him somewhere was anybody's guess. I felt differently about Glenda's death, too. From the first, I had discounted the random killer theory, even though there had been similar murders in surrounding communities. I felt even stronger about it now, and if I was right, that meant someone offed Glenda for a reason. Someone she knew. I shuddered. I didn't like that thought at all, especially because it meant the killer might be someone that I knew, too, and I just couldn't imagine knowing a murderer. I mean, what do you say to them? You can't ask a killer what they did today. They just might tell you. This morning, Deputy Giles said that someone had broken into Fairbanks during the night. My initial thought that kids were the culprits had also changed. Kids around here don't do things like that at 3 in the morning. Adults maybe, but not kids, not around here. We're too remote. Unless you have a car, you can't get here easily. I couldn't see school-age kids walking miles on end down River Road in the dark and cold on a school night to visit a house where a murder had recently taken place, not even on a dare. The deputy also mentioned that as far as he could tell, nothing was missing from the house. Now I wondered, would someone bother to break into a house and not take anything? But then again, did the actions of burglars or even killers, for that matter, make sense on any level? No one ever said they had to have a reason for their actions. Even in the best of circumstances, I've always been of the opinion that murder is an unreasonable act. Unless, I thought suddenly, they were looking for what wasn't there. Unless what they wanted was so small, so obscure an item that the police didn't even know it existed. Unless whoever broke into Fairbanks couldn't find what they were looking for because someone else had it. Someone like me. My brain finally clicked onto something of importance. Sally Blue, Glenda's notebook, jacket pocket. Rushing to the old wooden coat rack in the hall, I fished around deep into the left front pocket and pulled out pay dirt. Well, not exactly, but I did find the notebook. I took it into the kitchen and sat down at the old wooden table. My heart was thumping and my hands were shaking as I examined the leather cover. The book was small, about 3 inches by 5. It was made of a dark brown, rich, beautifully greened leather and featured a short strap from the back of the book that led to a gold clasp on the front. It was thinner and much more elegant, but the book reminded me of a diary my grandma had given me for a birthday long ago. Then I realized I should not have touched the book. Oops, I wasn't even sure if fingerprints could be lifted from leather or if from paper for that matter, but it was too late to worry about that now. I debated whether I should call the police right away or if I should open it first. The clasp looked as if someone had opened it with a key, but when I brushed my fingertips along the sides, it released smoothly. So much for any further debate. Whatever written nuggets of information I'd half expected to find inside, they weren't there. Glenda had written on the first page, for example, if you find me dead, so-and-so did it. It wasn't a book that showed the dates and times of her many important appointments, thus indicating an appointment with her killer. Nor was it addressed an address book or a diary. Instead, it looked like a combination recipe book and place for spur-of-the-moment notes for herself. Only the first few pages were used, but the gum line that stuck all of the unlined ivory pages together at the top was a bit thicker, leading me to believe that Glenda tore out the pages when she was through with them. So either she had accomplished the task she reminded herself to do, or she had transferred the information to a more permanent place. The first page read in slanted block letters, "Carl, call Charles T. at CS ASAP." Underneath that, printed in similar style, was, "Have HH bring transfer papers to house." The first line made no sense to me. The second was somewhat clearer. Transfer papers indicated that Glenda had already purchased a horse, possibly from Hill Henley, HH, or one of his clients. If the note was as recent as I thought it was, Hill had never gotten the papers to Glenda to sign because she had left the house Sunday night to go to Shelbyville. I wonder if Glenda had already paid for the horse. If she hadn't, that might eliminate Hill from the list of suspects, if he was ever a suspect to begin with. He certainly wouldn't kill a client if he still had to transfer numerous thousands of dollars into his pocket. Or maybe she changed her mind about the horse, and that's exactly why he did kill her. Just where had Hill been on Monday, anyway? The second page read, "Tell C. Lou to add more lime to salsa." And below that was, "Equal parts check nuts, pea butter chips, chocolate chips, prez raisins." Two lines here that also made sense. C. Lou must be Cindaloo, Glenda's housekeeper and sometimes cook. Cindaloo Giles, one of the many daughters of our local equine veterinarian Doc Giles, and probably a niece or aunt, cousin to Jim Ed Giles and Deputy Giles, cleaned several of the larger homes in the area, in addition to working for Glenda several days a week. The second line looked like a recipe for some kind of trail mix, salsa and trail mix. Maybe Glenda had been planning a party. And the third and last written page that interested me the most, there were only a few words on the page. L equals opium plus saffron plus wine. What in the world? Opium? I knew it was a narcotic, a highly illegal drug, and I knew from watching CNN that opiate addiction accounted for a large portion of deaths due to drugs. Saffron, I thought, was a kind of flour or spice, and wine was a given. But what was L? The opium part concerned me. Surely Glenda had not been into drugs. Had her murder been some kind of drug deal gone wrong? If so, that would then remove Bubba as a possible killer. At least I hope so. I knew kids were getting into hard drugs younger and younger, but at age 10 here in rural Cheatham County, I didn't think it likely. But it might indicate that Bubba saw Glenda's supplier and Bubba didn't leave of his own accord. On the other hand, Glenda had been a health nut. She had been a strong advocate of organic food, bran muffins, bean sprouts, herbs, and exercise. Although it was possible to combine a healthy lifestyle with drug addiction, I didn't think it very probable. No, the more I thought about the idea, the more I knew it didn't fit. I got up and paced the room, Hank following me doggedly at my heels. My brain was whizzing. The ideas were forming and then spinning out of reach before I had a chance to grasp onto them. After making a few quick but cautious decisions, I picked up the phone and called Carol Carson. "Have you found Bubba?" she asked before I could identify myself. What would any of us do without caller ID? "No, but I've got a few ideas. I think you can help me with one." I asked if she was planning to go to the library in Ashland City anytime soon. "Tomorrow. I usually go Thursday mornings because they have a story hour for the younger kids. Could you possibly go today?" She admitted that possibly she could. "Detective Giles is supposed to drop by this evening so I can look over my statement for the police report, but I can be back by then." "I'm not sure what you should look for other than any information the library might have on Fairbanks or Colonel Sam Henley. I don't get to the library too often now, but when I was growing up, our county library had a section on local history. And I was thinking that the library in Ashland City might have local information on people or places near here that might not be online." Before she could question my motives, I continued, "I'm not sure it's important, but I've got a nagging suspicion that Bubba's disappearance and Glenda's death are related, and that it's all tied in with Fairbanks and possibly even Colonel Sam Smith and Colonel Sam and the Civil War. Who knows? Maybe I'm way off base." "I can't possibly see any connection," Carol said, "but if you think it'll help, I'll load up the kids as soon as the older ones get home from school and go this afternoon." I had to give the Carsons credit. They did have a daily housekeeper nanny, but Carol was a truly hands-on mother. The kids went to public schools, and she and Keith, when he was not out touring, attended every baseball game and dance recital their offspring participated in. It was a lot more than I could say for the way that other people parented their children. "One more thing," I asked. "Can you call Hill and find out if Glenda was buying a horse from him or if she'd already bought one? Oh, and see if you can find out who Charles T. at CS might be. I found a reference for that in Glenda's notes. My next call was to Darcy because I needed some of her internet expertise. I'm probably the only person on the planet who doesn't like the internet. It just doesn't grab me. I like face-to-face interaction, or barring that, at least voice-to-voice, although I know the internet can do both of that these days. But not liking to spend time on the internet did put me at a disadvantage. Most other trainers around the country had fancy websites, and many had attracted new clients or sold horses through their lavish whiz-bang online pages. Some of the star horses even had their own Facebook pages and had hundreds of friends. But I was happy with a simple website that listed my training philosophy and credits, along with a few photos that John or somehow had put up. Darcy kept nagging me to spend more time online. And with a sigh, I realized that she was right. I needed to better utilize the internet, for it was a great tool, but not today. We'll finish this chapter next week.